30 seconds, reality as you know it will cease to exist. In its place, you will find a new dimension, identical to the one you've left behind, only slightly better. Take a deep breath and open your mind to the magic within you. This is no ordinary podcast. This podcast is a ritual.
1, 2, 3.
You're listening to this podcast because you want magic to make your life better. Maybe you dream of radical change, digging yourself out of depression, manifesting financial security, or just connecting to a luminous experience of enchantment, the very sort that often feels so lacking in our materialist modern world. Or maybe you've tempered your expectations and learned to recognize that everything, even radical changes, always start with small steps and slight shifts. So you put on this podcast today because you hope that by the time it finished, your reality would be slightly better in some meaningful way. That might mean you feel entertained, thankful to just think about something else for the length of this conversation. Or you might leave it inspired with new ideas and powerful epiphanies you can bring back into your day-to-day. Or maybe this will be one of those milestone moments, the glorious light bulb that appears over your head and illuminates your path from here on as you set forth into the boldest possible future you can possibly imagine. Well, at the very least, that's what I hope it will do for you. Because my name is Devin Person, and I'm America's number one wizard. I host this podcast as a ritual, which has been going strong for over 5 years, because I want listeners like you to not only think about magic in new ways, but take that magic back into your life in powerful ways. I spend hours sharing my thoughts and interviewing fascinating guests because I believe ideas are like seeds. And while every single one won't blossom and bloom, more than a few are bound to sink down into the fertile soil of your imagination and grow into changes that ripple out from you into your world. And when we add up the magical changes created by every single listener, whoever has or ever will listen to this podcast as a ritual, those little differences, that collective nudge in a new direction, all of that will come together and make our reality slightly better. So that's my pitch. That's why I think you should care about this podcast, why you should participate in this ritual, why you should tell at least one friend this week about this cool wizard podcast you think they'd like, and if you're feeling extra magically generous, why you should pop over to patreon.com/thispodcastisaritual to support the show and help our magic grow. And that's how I pitch my ideas as a wizard. I do what I can to help you see your own magic, to recognize the power of small shifts, and motivate you to use it in new ways. And I learned about this motivational style of pitching myself through talking to today's guest, Allison McGuire, creator of the McGuire Method, which is a system taught by her and her coaches to all sorts of business leaders and fancy pants professionals looking to improve that specific skill everyone knows they need to do better and secretly worries they totally suck at, which of course is selling yourself. Like it or not, we've evolved from seeing ourselves as serfs and subjects to ongoing projects and personal brands. Lean too hard into this and you lose track of your true self. But if you steer clear from it entirely, you miss out on an incredible opportunity to express your ideas clearly, stand out in people's memories, and make an impact on everyone you interact with. So I'll let Allison sell herself in this episode. After all, that is what she's great at. But let's suffice it to say here that Allison has led tech companies, strolled through the halls of power, faced failure, stumbled over success, and become an incredible teacher in the art of how to sell yourself. Hello, Allison.
Hello.
Welcome to Ritual Space.
Thank you so much for having me.
What's our magic word going to be?
Magic word. Sparkle.
Sparkle. That's a good one. All right. 1, 2, 3. Say it with me.
Sparkle.
Love it. Now, I'm going to put this somewhat bluntly. Why should I care what you have to say?
I'm passionate about storytelling, especially those stories that have been overlooked. And I've known from a very young age that due to my acting background, performance background, storytelling background, that I've had the skills to tell those stories. But now, as a coach and as running a coaching company, helping others find their voice, in order for others to find a voice that feels authentic to them and powerful and confident in that voice, they kind of have to listen to what I have to say. So that's why you should care.
Beautiful. Yeah, wasn't trying to be rude there. I just knew that you're a master of the pitch. And so I wanted you to start with a little pitch. And great, I'm sold. Sign me up.
All right.
So tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got from acting to where you are now.
I have a bit of a circuitous path to where I am now as an entrepreneur.
Oh, you didn't take the straightforward path like I did to become a wizard? Just that, boom,
yeah,
straight to Hogwarts?
Yeah, yeah. I know there's a very direct path to wizardry, but no, entrepreneurship.
I haven't found it.
I was reflecting, coincidentally, last night on being an entrepreneur, and I'm writing this one-woman show on my life. And I grew up in the entertainment business in Hollywood, in LA. I was an actor. I then got involved in politics while I was in college, and I had an internship in Parliament that turned into a job. I worked in the US Congress. I found that politics was pretty disillusioned. I was pretty disillusioned by politics. And at the time, I felt it was the worst our political system would ever be. How wrong I was. And I really... Look, I can argue, but I would rather get work done. So I found that there was a lot of arguing and not a lot of compromising to get things done. Mm-hmm. And I became obsessed with technology. I thought that was where I could drive the most impact. And the reason I left acting, I should close the loop there, but is that I love stories that are real and character work that I can sink my teeth into and give me a good black box theater and let me write something and I'm gonna perform the shit out of it. But make me do a Charmin commercial for $200,000, not so interested in it. Yeah. And that's, of course, less about the money. Money's great. It's more about the craft and the art. And I don't see that as a form of artistry. And to me, it was always really important to stay true to that self and really keep that sacred. So when I moved into politics, I thought that I could take some of those storytelling skills and really help people. Found that I couldn't, unfortunately. And I worked in national security and human rights. I handled the women's portfolio in the Human Rights Commission under the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. Did some great work there, but found that even having a hearing on human trafficking or violence against women, no legislation would come from that. And that was very disheartening. So once I developed this obsession with tech and just decided, I'm going to work in tech with no experience whatsoever, I networked my way into finding an amazing company. And they created a job for me that was more in the communications side and evolved into business development. And while I was there, I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. But as I was reflecting last night, now hitting a decade of being officially an entrepreneur, I realized I was hustling as a seven-year-old to get lemonade and then to sell the lemonade outside my front porch. And then I was hustling when I was 12. I wrote, directed, starred in a show in the neighborhood. We had a stage in the back and I had all the neighborhood kids in it. I took Polaroids of the cast and I had them autograph it and auctioned it off to the parents and sold tickets. And like, so I guess I was already an entrepreneur at 12. So I suppose it's been longer than a decade. But I've always been entrepreneurial. And when I had this idea, when I was working at this tech company, I began just floating it and seeing what people thought. And people really liked it. I was able to raise $100,000, which at the time I thought was a lot of money. And it turns out when you're running a company, it goes by very quickly, especially if you decide to upend your life in DC and move to New York, where $100,000 is like, oh, I get off the train and buying there a bagel. $400,000. Yeah, exactly. And yeah. Then became a tech startup founder, had a really wild experience there, and was very frustrated as a woman fundraising that I didn't get the same level of respect as my male peers, and really, really struggled with that. But what I was good at was pitching. I was really, really good at pitching. So much so that my acting skills that I thought were overpriced and had student loans for were paying off in a tangible way because I won every pitch competition that I entered. And I found that other entrepreneurs would come to me and say, hey, teach me how to pitch like that. So I began coaching entrepreneurs really on the side because my tech startup was hemorrhaging cash and I frankly needed to get out of my credit card debt. And it was a really interesting process of watching the transformation that they received. And I developed this concept of building a persona. So the strongest version of yourself and how you show up authentically, but you can also use that a little bit as a buffer for rejection so that people don't take it so personally. And I developed this when I was outside in the waiting room of my dream investor's office, Andreessen Horowitz, and developed it, felt much more confident pitching, applied it to myself and applied it to my clients. And that grew. And now the full circle is now I built this coaching communications company, shut down my tech companies, and which were a huge ego blow, but that's another story. And then now I have my communications coaching firm, the McGuire Method. And just the full circle of it all is that that investor, that was my dream investor, we now coach them and their startups. So it's such a joy to be able to see the impact that the work has and to take the confidence that I found within myself and be able to apply that to other people so they can find their best selves.
I love that you just took us on this whole journey with you because I think that was something I encountered as I was getting to the end of my 20s was like, ah, there's all of these random things. How do they fit together? And suddenly I've described this before as, you know, different notes. They're just notes. But then suddenly when you put them in sequence, you're like, oh, there's a melody here. And I see how this goes back to even childhood stuff. And suddenly you find that common thread. And so I think that's really cool how these acting skills led you in these different directions and you're able to see kind of what is that commonality. And the image that came to me as you're describing your business was like, you're on a boat and the boat's leaking. So you're trying to bail yourself out with a bucket. And as that goes, the bucket keeps getting bigger and bigger until suddenly you're like, oh, the bucket's now a different boat. I'm just going to get into this and go see where this takes me. So can you share a little bit more about this idea of creating a persona? What does that mean?
The idea is that we have been collectively, certainly in this country, and I know in other countries, but that success looks like a certain type of person who comes from a certain type of place, who typically is a certain type of gender with a certain type of skin color and a certain type of of person that they love. And that narrow view of what a successful person looks like, acts like, etc., I found people, myself included, were trying to imitate that in order to reach success. But it led to people feeling more insecure because it did not feel authentic at all. And that's what I experienced as well. When I was working in DC in the halls of Congress, I was wearing these boxy suits. And I really did adopt the character from House of Cards, Robin Wright's character. I forget her name in the show, but she had a really short blonde haircut and she wore these fantastic suits. And so I just adopted that, thinking this is what success looks like to the closest degree that I can get in DC. And from there, just figuring out like, where am I most comfortable in myself? What does my most elevated self look like? How does she walk, talk, dress? What does she wear? How does she comport herself in the world? How do I want to be perceived that feels authentic to me? So there are lots of people, in particular in the entertainment business, and why I don't believe in idol worshiping of celebrities is we don't know these people.
Right.
So when you find out that behind the scenes, this person who's supposed to be an angel is actually an asshole, people get, oh my God, not this person. I love them in that movie. It's like they're an actor or they're a comedian or they're a celebrity. Like, you don't fucking know these people. So
not that person who famously lies and makes up different characters for a living that I've only seen in mediated performances. I know what Christian Bale is all about. We're close. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So I say all the time, like, when you build a persona, it should not be what you think successful looks like or feels like, or what you've seen has been promoted mm-hmm. or has been who the founders that have been funded. You're never going to look like that person. You're yeah. never going to come from that person's background. And so, and for some of my clients, they do. And
right.
that's great. But sometimes even they feel like they're acting like something else because they want to impress mm-hmm. their parents, or they want to continue a family legacy or whatever. So beyond me teaching people, here's how to become your most confident, authentic self by building this persona. I had a lot of clients who are introverted, who are on the spectrum, who are data heavy engineers. And they would say to me consistently, look, I'm introverted, or I don't like attention, or I just can't be this big personality like you. I can't be a successful communicator. And that's when it hit me that people need to feel confident, comfortable in themselves, and that any type of communication style can be effective. So I developed these 9 persona archetypes, and they range from an operator, who's someone who just gets shit done. They're relatively emotionless. They solve problems. You feel confident handing something to them, to a motivator. That's the big picture visionary, painting a picture of that world that's just out of reach, but showing you a way to get there. A real talker, cutting through the BS, letting you know what's what, whether you want to hear it or not. There are 9 of them. I won't go through all 9 unless you want me to. But we have a quiz where you can find out which one you are, and then you can learn more about them, and maybe another one resonates with you. But once you find, we as coaches help you find that one, you serve that, you use that as a container. And we can also show you how you work with other personas, which ones you might have friction with, how to optimize mm-hmm. those relationships, and which ones you might work really well with, that we can enhance that working relationship.
That's fascinating. So if I understand you correctly, it feels like I hear a lot of people talking about masking these days, and the way that we all have to wear this kind of social identity. And there's, I think, often in the discourse, this idea that we got to take the mask off. But it's almost like we just need to find a better fitting one, because we're always going to be code switching between different environments and performing different versions of ourselves in different contexts. But I think that's such a cool point about, there's this assumption that successful CEO looks a certain way. And if you don't, if that mask doesn't fit you naturally, it's going to be falling off. It's going to look like when I was at the University of Texas and I would see the business school students going to some like networking conference, and they're all just wearing these like 2 large suits. And it's like, okay, you look like kids playing at the idea of business. Like it's not accurate. But what I hear you saying is that there's power in finding what your authentic self is, and then going beyond that, instead of just endlessly going, who am I at my core? You have these archetypes that people can resonate with and go, oh, that really makes me make sense. And now I understand strategies that are available for someone with my particular set of skills or way of being in the world. So the archetype's kind of an extension of, where are you starting? And here's a way to get up and running before we have to do all of the personalization to make it 100% unique to you.
Yes. In my coaching company, so I created the McGuire method from those performance skills, applying those performative skills, in particular from acting, applying them to real life, pitching, mm-hmm. presenting, navigating Q&As, talking to your spouse, negotiating, persuading, influencing, et cetera. And it's really, what we do in all of our coaching is we first start with a 1-hour assessment. We have the client come in, they prepare nothing so that we can get to know you. And sometimes we see, well, oftentimes we see things that the client won't. We'll see themes, and then we'll point out, okay, well, you say you want to be like this, but what I'm hearing is this. Is that because you're just adapting to the circumstances, or you're code switching, or is it because that is your authentic self, but you're too afraid to show it? Now, we're not saying you have to be totally vulnerable with everyone in your life. That's not what authenticity and vulnerability don't necessarily, there's an overlap, but they're not the same thing.
Right. They're not synonymous. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really want people to feel confident in themselves. And I mean, think about when you put on your robe and how great you feel, how that changes how you feel about yourself and your purpose and what you're doing in the world, even if it's just for a moment, trying something on to see if the thing fits.
Yeah.
So clothes have energy, shoes have energy, and figuring out like, okay, now if I dress like this, or if I act like this, is that going to make me feel better about myself, not just better in this situation interacting with this person? And the biggest thing that I tell clients is like, look, you might not be, you can't, not everyone's going to like you. And I'll tell you that from my, look, I'm a nice person. Some people don't like me, or a lot of people don't like me. I don't know, because I don't know what people say behind my back, but a lot of people do like me. And it doesn't matter, because at least I'm real to who I am. So I say people might not like me, but they respect me. Well, I hope they do at least. And it's better to be respected for who you authentically are than try to morph yourself into all these different people so that you'll be liked by everyone.
Well, that, what that brings up for me is this idea that authenticity isn't an on-off switch where there's only one authentic self and I'm either being it or I'm not, but there's an authentic source within me that I can tap into in different ways. So if I'm going out and just trying to hustle cell phones and I don't care about cell phones and I don't like sales and that just has nothing to do with me, that would feel very fake for me. But I can authentically be myself at home, chilling with my partner, having one kind of conversation, which is extremely different than when I'm public speaking and I'm still being authentically myself, but that wouldn't be an appropriate tone in another social situation. Or even, you know, who I am as a wizard is not who I am as a hypnotherapist. Like when I'm seeing clients, I switch between different modes and they all, I think, come from that same source, but it's not just there's one real me and everything else is an illusion.
And there are certainly, and going back to the celebrity example, people who have one version that is their 100% fake self. That is fake. Yeah. That is a persona in a different way of defining persona. And that is not what I ascribe to. And I totally agree with you. There's a way that we comport ourselves around our friends, around our family. We might avoid certain political topics around our family because we know it's going to cause a huge fissure, or we might jump into it because we love the debate. Or with our friends, we might touch this topic or not this. And also think about the way that I coach people is I'll say to them, how real talk you want me to be right now. And that's with some of them. Some of them I can gauge what's their comfort level and how, not how real I can be with them, but like how far can I push them? And as a coach, our job is to push people outside their comfort zone. And some people can jump from island to island. That's their comfort zone. Huge. Some people like they can touch the water. That's their comfort zone. And us just going like, okay, maybe you could touch the water, but how will we get your ankle wet? And that way we're pushing you to examine certain aspects of yourself. But if it's too much, some people will shut down. I do the same thing with my friends. And I learned a very important lesson very recently with my best friend, actually, where she had a great moment happen, which was tied to not a great moment. And I acknowledged, and we send voice notes to each other because she's in a very inconvenient time zone. I'm in Los Angeles, she's in Spain. And we send voice notes to each other, and she sends me this voice note with this news. I send back, you know, congratulations on the good part. And then I harped pretty long on the second part, and mostly because I'm protective of her and I felt she was being taken advantage of, etc. It took her a while to come back to me, but when she did, she told me that that hurt and she didn't really need to hear that. And I am in a learning process of like, as my husband will say, like, not everybody needs to know your opinion 100% of the time. Cause I'm very much like, you want to hear my opinion, but I don't ask the question. I just throw it out there. Just so I'm learning. I'm learning that like, even with my best friend, I don't always need to share every single thing. And it's not, I'm not being myself, but it's considering the audience. And that's a huge thing that we do in coaching is like people, myself included, for a long time, like, don't think about how the audience is going to be impacted by what we say. And look, I didn't think about it when I was sending my voice note to my friend. But as an actor, the first thing we think about is how's the audience going to react? For this one woman show I'm writing, I frequently am like, they're not going to care about this, or they're going to have this reaction, or I want to make them feel angry. Okay, how am I going to evoke that emotion?
Well, and I think this word real is really a good kind of thing for us to circle around, because I think everyone's experienced somebody who says something incredibly rude or hurtful and they're like, sorry, I'm just being real.
Being honest,
But you're right. Like, you're doing a show for an audience. You could be real and describe every single detail of your life, but that's not what the audience needs to hear. They don't need to hear, I got up and then I brushed my teeth and then I ate breakfast and then I did this and then I went to the bathroom. And this is like they don't need all of that. Those are real things, but it's not considering them. And I think often when I encounter people who are like, you don't like that? That's just how I am. That's just me. Or I'm just being real. There's a rigidity there. There's a saying like, I only want to be in this one mode and I'm not willing to switch and be flexible. Whereas I think, yeah, like being fake, like saying, oh, I love your earrings when I do not like your earrings.
What?
That's not real. But no, I like your earrings. They're great little circles. I like them. No, but as like, you know, but I think you can still be real and think about, oh, what is this person? What would be helpful to this person right now? What do I have in my experience that I can offer? And how can I kind of parse that out a little bit? Because sometimes, yeah, I can have an opinion and this person just needs to talk. They don't actually want an opinion at all. So I'm still being real by just listening to them or by thinking about, like you were saying, oh, this person just performed. Their performance wasn't great, but they're looking for support. And so how can I give them that support? And maybe later on, find ways to open up conversation about, you know, hey, like you're going to perform again. Would you like some more, you know, critical feedback? Are you open to that? Mm-hmm. But that's very different than being like, realness is just what I want to say and everybody else can go get fucked.
Yeah, the real, I'm just real. I feel like, no, you're just an asshole. I mean, look, that's
most of the time, yes.
like I know I've been called an asshole behind my back and in front of my face. And I'm sure I've come off as that because I can be brusque or I can be pretty direct and definitively direct of like, this is, the sky is red and nobody challenges me because of the way I say it.
Right.
And I know I need to work on that. But this, I'm just real and this is just the way that it is, drives me crazy. That's just you not giving a shit about anybody else but your own opinion. Sorry if it offends you. Sorry if that hurts your feelings. Sorry you feel that way.
Well, and I want to come back to what you said about coaching and when you see people and you have this initial intake and you get to kind of reflect. And I think that's something that's so valuable. And I get frustrated sometimes because I think most people never get to experience it or only get to experience it within this, like, you know, kind of like I have purchased a service context. But I think sometimes, you know, all of your friends know something about you that you have no idea about and no one's telling you because it feels hard and it's easier just to let you keep doing that thing until at some point I've experienced this. Like a friend will do one time a friend did an impression. They're like, oh, I can do an impression of Devin. No. And I was like, oh my God, I immediately recognize that I do that. And I hate that I do that. I did not know that I do that. Oh my God. And, you know, it's helpful to have those reflections in a constructive way where it's not just something we're going to recoil from. But I think you can also spot those positives because I imagine what you were saying earlier, when you see someone talking about these things, you're like, oh, here's a theme. And they're like, whoa, I wasn't aware of that. It was very obvious to you, but I'm so caught up in my doubts and fears and trying to be this and that, that it takes somebody else to be able to say, let's just pull this to the surface and move that forward. How does that feel?
Exactly. And that's the fluidity of coaching is it's not, look, I have over a dozen coaches and they like coming in with a plan, which is very smart and I've trained them well and they have great backgrounds and they're incredible at what they do. I am the wild one that's like, don't give me any preparation. I'm not going to research your company beforehand. I'm not going to know anything about your industry. And I have no idea what I'm about to get into. For me, there's partially the thrill of that. But I find I do my best, richest work when I see them from a blank slate. I haven't prejudged them. Not that my team is doing that, but they want to make sure, we all want to make sure we are providing excellent service. And I have very high standards and expectations. And anybody who's worked with me, either on my team or as clients, understands that. So I really want to make sure when I come in that I am in observation mode and coming from this acting background, I am fascinated by people. Why do people do what they do? How do people think so differently than me? Oh my God, so weird. That's also why I love travel, is to see how other people live. And especially in America, where we think we're the center of the universe, or not, it's very interesting to see, okay, here's another way of doing something. Why don't I try that?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the harm in just trying something that somebody else does that maybe I haven't thought of, but okay, that's fair.
Yeah. Again, I think that comes back to that idea of flexibility, of being able to let go of there's one right way to do things, and instead saying, let me try these other things and see if they work for me. And mm-hmm. you know what? Maybe Thai harem pants will stay in Thailand and those don't mm-hmm. work for me in my fashion aesthetic, but there's other things that do. So working with people and creating these personas, I don't know if you want to use yourself as an example or maybe just a kind of, you know, nameless client, but like, how do you find that persona and kind of hone in on that?
In this assessment that we do, this hour-long assessment for listeners who are going to become clients, I will not give away all of the details of the questions of the assessment because we want to surprise you with them. Yeah. But they include things such as, you know, how do you define success, or let's look at your values, or let's unpack mm-hmm. parts of you that you may, they're all designed to be confidential. So we don't share mm-hmm. that publicly. We don't record any assessments. We have zero assessments that have ever been recorded. We record a lot of our sessions, but no assessments. Mm-hmm. And it's really an opportunity for the coach to connect with the client and uncover, oh, wow, this person is, one of my coaches did an assessment session the other day and said, this client is seen as the office mom, but she has a huge level of ambition. And she doesn't see how being the air quotes office mom is getting in her way because she's being assigned all these petty things and she's not right. being seen for her actual talent. And it's a very revealing process. And I really appreciate clients who can go there with us. And it's very rare that we have somebody who just won't answer a question. I mean, I don't know that that's happened. Maybe like one question they haven't had an answer to, but yeah. people, my biggest rule of taking on clients, I have two rules. One is you have to want to do the work. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to have to convince you to show up for your session. No.
Yeah.
That's a waste of my time. That's a waste of your time. That's a waste of your money. Mm-hmm. Two, you can't be an asshole. I've worked with people who have been abusive and taken advantage of me and my team, and I will never do it again. And if I see any mm-hmm. warning signs, like, nope, you're on the chopping block. So when it comes to this building a persona, you know, for me, I had to examine, fashion has always been a big thing for me. And maybe that's because I've seen costumes in acting as so powerful. Mm-hmm. When I was in a show in high school, I played the outcast sister. And all the sisters wore all black. They were in mourning. Their father had died. And then I have a lover. And then I wear a red dress to meet him or something mm-hmm. like that. I don't remember the entire plot. So I come out in a red dress. And I have a photo of this actually from high school. Yes. Which is hilarious. And all of my sisters are in black and I'm in red. And what a stark contrast that provides. So I've always thought about costuming also as telling a story. And I love fashion, and in living in New York and Soho, I've watched the models and just loved it. And so I had to think about like, what feels authentic to me? How can I embody my most powerful self? And I will say that I got a big speaking gig years ago. This is pre-COVID. So this is one of the biggest gigs I had done ever. And speaking to 250 people, doing this big workshop and this pitch transformation. And I thought, well, what the hell do I wear? And so I went shopping and I spent the most amount of money that I've ever spent on clothing when I went into a Diane von Furstenberg boutique and tried on this jumpsuit that's a fuchsia jumpsuit. And I have never felt more confident in myself. And I thought, that's the feeling I want. And so it kind of doesn't matter if people think it's too loud or they think it's too this or too that, because I feel good about myself. Mm-hmm. So for me, sometimes it starts with the clothing. For others, it starts with their eye contact, or it starts with their inner narrative about themselves. We coached a client to get a raise, and she was really she had a lot of imposter syndrome, didn't feel like she deserved it. And we had to examine like, what are those self-limiting beliefs? And that is coming out in the way you speak, because you're using a lot of upspeak. So it sounds like you're not mm-hmm. sure about yourself, instead yeah. of I am worth this, or these are industry mm-hmm. comps. This is what I am worth. I've done this type of work and I'm ready for the
powerful,
next level.
Direct statements, not, yeah. Right. I was thinking, I think
Very much. So that's what we call an ism.
Mm.
Two parts of this. One is I say anytime you are communicating, you never want to say, I feel, I think, I believe, because obviously you feel, think, and believe those things because you're saying them. Unless you're speaking for someone else, they think, blah, blah, blah. So imagine presenting a new case study to your team and you say, I think these numbers don't really give us an accurate picture into our customers' behavior versus these numbers don't give us an accurate picture into our customers' behaviors. How much more confident do you sound in yourself and like you know what the fuck you're talking about? So that's one part. The other part is what we call isms are filler words and physicalities that we have that oftentimes we don't notice. They can be the I thinks, the ums, the ahs, the likes. I had an ism for a long time when I was in DC where I would say evidently a lot. Yep. And I didn't realize I was saying it a lot, but a friend of mine pulled me aside, thank God, and said, hey, Allison, you think you're sounding smarter by saying evidently a lot, but actually it's having the opposite effect. So evidently that was not working. And I decided to not say that so much anymore and actively avoid that. So we had a client that used to say, interesting, but they said interesting every time the person on the other end would say something they thought was stupid. So it became this very interesting response that was very clear to the audience that, oh, you think I'm a dumbass when you say that, but they thought they were just covering because they needed to say something. So we look at isms, we tell clients isms, people say they love the concept of isms, they learn theirs, then they hate isms. And what sucks is that isms change. So you might get rid of evidently, but then all of a sudden you pick something else.
A new one comes in.
Yes, I picked up this one where I was just rubbing my hands like I was cold and I just kept doing it and I couldn't stop doing it. It's so annoying, but especially as an actor, like we pick up isms from other people. So also if you have high levels of empathy, you tend to pick up other people's isms as well. So that's something that we work on.
Sure, mirroring, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, when I had a late night talk show in a basement theater years ago, we filmed it and there was one point where I was going over to my editors to, you know, work on an episode, and he had made a supercut of all the times that I said, all right, to like, you know, like, oh, we just had a musical guest. All right, folks. And all right, we're going to, all right, all right. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. You've got like 3 minutes of me saying, all right. That's not all right. I got to change that.
I love that story. That's good.
But I love this idea about heightening things like fashion. If you think about being on a stage, you go backstage and you look at the actors and stage makeup is intense.
Oh my
but
God.
You want to be seen from further out. And the same with the way that people speak on stage. You want to be heard clearly. And whereas, you know, in a different medium, you might be able to subtly convey the way that sister's character is different. A red dress just telegraphs it. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of David Byrne in the Stop Making Sense concert documentary, where he has this kind of awkward persona and he's wearing, you know, sort of normal work clothes because there's this commentary on American life. And he's like, okay, what if I'm wearing a suit, but bigger? And it takes it, and like, it's so clear. It's like, okay, here's what we're dealing with, but we're expanding it and making it absurd. And so it sounds like that's what you're doing with people, is helping them figure out what are the compelling things about them? What are the strategic decisions they're making? Because you could accent office mom, but that's not going to get the result she wants. She's not pitching to say, hey, everybody, complain to me if you need more printer toner. That's not what she wants. She wants something different. So once somebody has their persona, it's starting to be articulated, they're finding those ways that they can make it more resonant. How do they then apply that to selling themselves or pitching?
So let's say you and I are pitching a product. Let's say it's...
Let's just do me and my podcast, because then I can actually use that.
Great. Let's say it's your podcast. Okay. So let's say your persona is an entertainer. And let's say my persona is a real talker. My persona, by the way, when I'm public speaking, it's like a motivator with a real talker edge. When I'm coaching, it's a real talker with a motivator edge. So let's just say, for the sake of this, you're an entertainer, I'm a real talker, and we're both pitching your podcast to different audiences. Yeah. It should be different because we're different people. So an entertainer, we're gonna focus on some vocal inflection patterns. And you're, by the way, not going to know that we're doing this, meaning you're not going to know the mechanics of, now it's vocal inflection pattern time. Like, that's not what we're going to do. But we might say, oh, you want a joke? Yeah. This is where you can insert a pause. This is where you can move your body like this. And we can show you physicalities based on the type of entertainer you are. We can show you ways to get the audience engaged through humor. Mm-hmm. And with me, I might say, real talk, this is what you're missing in your life. And yeah. this is what you're going to miss out on if you don't get on this podcast train right now. By the way, I'm just projecting the entertainer on you. I don't know which one you are. But that way, it feels authentic to me. And they don't get that from you, because if you start selling it in the way that I am of like, look, real talk, you gotta listen to my podcast. Yeah. People are going to feel like, who is this guy? And why does he feel so fake? And this isn't. And for me, if I start cracking jokes about everything, people might not resonate with that. Although I do think I'm quite funny, but that's not my primary persona.
Yeah.
So we think about like, okay, what's the impact you want to have on the audience? If Devin's impact is lively, you want to keep them on their toes. You want to get them curious. What's the emotional journey we're going to take them on versus real talker? I want to give them maybe clarity, or I want to give them a realization. Maybe they don't want to hear it. Maybe it's tough to hear. So I mm-hmm. might say like, you don't know where the magic is in your life. You don't, and you can't until you listen to this podcast. That's my pitch. Your pitch is going to be something totally different. And we would do that based on any of the personas you have. And we would show you how, if it's an operator, it's like, look, you got 15 minutes in the car on the way to work, and you got 15 minutes on the way to like in the car on the way home. You can listen mm-hmm. to half an episode in that amount of time.
Like, you can sign up for the Patreon. It's the price of a cup of coffee. Right, how many times do you go to Starbucks? Just give that to me and you get more podcasts. So you're in the car every day. And it's going to make your reality slightly better. Yeah.
Exactly.
No, I think it's one of the things that I've struggled with, because I would love to learn more about your system and figure out which archetype I am. But as someone who's consciously cultivated this wizard archetype and thought about what that means, it's at odds with things where like, oh, I'm going to have a podcast. I'm trying to do it in the most magical way I can, in the most authentic way I can. And there's a lot of things in that podcast world that I've shied away from, because I was like, ooh, that just like, that doesn't fit with what I'm doing. Like, if I started every episode, even if, you know, my podcast analytics guru, which I don't have, told me like, here's what you got to do to get more audience. If I was like, oh, all right, everybody, we're going to have like a little QVC show about all the merch you can get on the Patreon, and this is this, and this is that. It's like, that doesn't feel authentic to me. That doesn't feel authentic to a wizard. And so I'm like, I just want to throw some ideas out there and mm-hmm. let them resonate. But I really appreciate what you're saying, because yeah, I think that's where a lot of people lose confidence, because they're just trying to play somebody else's game. Mm. And they're like, I don't like this game. This doesn't feel right to me. It feels, you know, argumentative or sleazy or something, which to somebody else doesn't feel any of those things. It feels great. It feels natural. Like, if you're being sold something by somebody who's really, really good at it, you don't feel like you're being sold to. You feel like, wow, that guy at AT&T sure helped me pick the best phone for my needs. That was awesome. Like,
just happened to be the most expensive one. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and to be clear about personas, because sometimes we'll see people will get a motivator and then they aren't a persuader and they don't think they can be persuasive. You can have traits and aspects from other personas. An entertainer can be persuasive. A persuader can get shit done like an operator. It doesn't mean that you are just this like one note, I can only do this, my impact is only this. You can pull in other aspects, which is the beauty of it, because then when people think, oh, I'm a firebrand, I can't paint a picture of a world, a vision that doesn't exist, but here's the pathway to get there. You can be a firebrand. Yeah. Just the way in which you're going to do that is different than maybe a motivator would.
So cool. So all right, there's nine. Do you think we can just kind of go through them? Because now I'm so fascinated that I want to
figure out what I mean. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So we start with the motivator. These are big picture visionaries. They paint a picture of a world that's just outside of your reach, and they show you the pathway to get there and leave their audience feeling inspired. Then we have diplomats. These are personas that are amazing collaborators. They look at other people's perspectives. They build a plan that works for everyone. And they do a great job of giving credit where credit's due. They don't take it on themselves. They make the audience feel valued and that their ideas and thoughts are important. Then we got your real talkers. These are the people who will tell you like, they'll just tell you what's what, and they don't apologize for it. They are going to say things sometimes that you don't really want to hear, but you do walk away talking to a real talker, interacting with a real talker, thinking, huh, I never thought of it that way. So you do have a sense of realization of something that maybe you didn't coming into the conversation. Then we have operators. These are problem-solving doers. They're people who are relatively emotionless. They tend to rely on data, on numbers, on metrics, on what they would call something like hard information to prove their points. They're very good at spotting inefficiencies, solving problems, and they make the audience feel confident because you know when you hand something to an operator, they're going to get the job done. Then we have listeners. These are personas that listen more than they speak, but also they're really good at having you answer your own questions and solve your own problems. These are people who, when you go to them with a problem, they'll answer your questions with questions. And you'll leave a listener's office thinking, huh, like I did solve my own problem. This dependable sponge soaked up all of this information, has a very Yoda-esque feel, but they gave me a new perspective. So a lot of introspection comes with listeners. Persuaders are people who take you on their path. It's A to Z. It's the express train. There are no letters in between. If that's the way they want to go, that's the way you're going. And often you'll be in their office or you'll start thinking in this circular way of, I don't want to do this thing. And then they somehow convince you to do this thing and get excited about doing the thing. Mm-hmm. And by the way, each of these personas, I can go into them or not, but there are challenges with each persona as well. So there are positives and negatives to personas, and understanding those are helpful for you to see how the audience interacts and sees you. So with persuaders, they can be very rigid in their thinking because they only have one way to go. But they provide clarity to the audience because you never doubt what a persuader is thinking. Mm-hmm. You never doubt that you're not sure what the persuader is thinking.
Right. Their pitch is clear. It's just, it might not be tailored to you.
Yes, it's definitely not tailored to you. It's just made for them. Yeah. And but it's very clear. You're not going to be confused. Then there are entertainers. These are grown-up jokers. These are people who keep folks on their toes. They do have points to make that are important, but they use humor as a way to engage with the audience, keep the audience, their values, making the audience feel lively. That's the impact that they have. And they often use exaggerated physicalities or vocal tonalities to land their points. Then we have stars. These are personas that can be critiqued as taking up a lot of space in the room. But when you're around a star, you feel like you've been touched by something supernatural. These are people who really capitalize on their brand cachet. And when you're in their presence, feel like, oh, wow, I'm being blessed in some way. So they do make you feel really excited to be around them. Then we have firebrands. These are the final persona. These are the heavy hitters. They aren't a real talker telling it like it is. In fact, their MO is to provoke the audience. Provocation as an impact can feel uncomfortable, but it can be a good thing because it can often push conversations, debates, topics, ideas to the edges and incorporate more perspectives than if you were to just use some other personas alone.
That is amazing. I feel like there's so many that I resonate in different ways, but it's such a great framing for how to think about those kind of things, of going into an experience with an audience and maybe recognize, oh, I'm trying to persuade and this is more appropriate to listen and get feedback, or actually I have a clear vision, let me persuade and motivate and I'm going to spell that out. So I love that.
Yeah.
Now, for the listeners at home, I know they're not going to get the full McGuire method in this podcast, but they can always go reach out to you through your website. But we like to end each episode with a spell, which is something that a listener that's, making dinner right now, listening to this podcast, they're on their commute, and I like to make it something easy so they can do it this week. They can just try something that is going to change their reality a little bit and move them in that new direction. And so I'm curious if you already have something that's coming to mind that that our listeners can do.
Not sure the formula that the spell
we'll figure
goes
it out
under.
Together. That's okay. That's how the wizard helps.
I love it. Wizard help. I want it to be related to confidence. And what came to me was, think of a moment in your life you felt most confident in yourself. It can be personal. It can be professional. And then visualize, close your eyes, think of that moment and then journal once you're done cooking dinner, not when you're driving, obviously, but journal about what were the components of that that made you feel confident. Was it what you were wearing? Was it who you were around? Were you by yourself? Were you in a big crowd? Was it that you climbed to the top of a mountain? Was it that you just gave birth? Was it that you got that promotion you were looking for? Was it that you put together that IKEA table that you swear to God you could never do? Like, what was it that made you feel confident in yourself? And that's what I would start to unpack for discovering your own confidence. Because my view is, if I can make as many people confident as I can while I walk this planet, what a better planet it would be if people made decisions based on confidence, not based on societal pressures or ego.
Wonderful. So I'm going to augment that and add a little magic wizard dust on top. So take a moment, like Allison said, think about this confident thing. And I think that's such a great advice of not thinking about confidence in the abstract, but a literal moment in your life where you're like, when I was on stage playing with this band at that show, I felt confident. When I was helping my friend move and I knew how to disassemble all the furniture, I felt confident. Like, whatever that is, journal that out so you have those rich details. Then let's go back to what we were talking about with appearance and fashion and those things, and think about some accessory. This could be something that you own or something that you're going to go out and find. And if you're going to go out and find it, you got to be confident. It's one of those things where when you see it, you're like, that's it. That's what I'm looking for. It can't be, is this it? I'm not sure. If you're hesitating, it's not it. But then do your own ritual. Light a candle, light some incense, chant, whatever you feel like doing. But make that your confident artifact. Take that experience and anchor that in that. So now you're like, I have my favorite Metallica shirt, and I was thinking about this time where I was like on stage and I was rocking so hard, and now that's my confident shirt. I'm putting that energy into that object, or this is a brooch, or this is a ring, or this is anything at all. It doesn't have to be something grandiose, but I love that idea of taking something that really connects with your persona and augmenting that to remind you whenever you look at it, whenever you're putting on that outfit, whenever you're going out into the world, that you're going, oh, right, yeah, that moment. Mm-hmm. I really did feel confident then, and I'm going to feel confident now.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. And I would yes and that and add. And when you go into, we haven't talked about this, but like nerves and anxiety, you go into situations that are uncomfortable, close your eyes, think of that moment, or hold onto that object, or settle into that breath that is related to that.
I love that. Yeah. I think that's a huge thing, that pause. That's really important. When I work with public speaking clients, that's like my number one tip. I'm like, if you take nothing else away, when you get out there and you're on stage, plant your feet, take a deep breath, count to three, and then start, because that lets you center yourself so you don't go out there going, hey, everybody, how's it going? And you're just kind of falling down the stairs the whole time. But instead, you're able to say, I've got my lucky Metallica shirt on. I'm here. I'm ready. Let's fucking do this.
Love it. Love it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Allison.
Thank you.
For more of Allison's magic, visit themaguiremethod.com, where you can learn more about this exciting method and take a fun quiz to help you find your archetypal pitching persona. The link for that quiz is in the show notes, but go to themaguiremethod.com, poke around, and hey, take your pitching and selling abilities to the next level by working with one of their coaches. And for more of the magic that I have pitched you on so thoroughly in this episode, that is this podcast as a ritual, well, that magic is in you already. You've listened to this episode. These ideas are sinking down into that soil, and all you have to do is water them and watch them grow. So if you feel like being a part of this ritual and helping us grow this project more widely, you can visit patreon.com/thispodcastisaritual, where just a few bucks each month helps me pay for the editor on this and make this thing grow and make this thing happen. So again, without you, the listener, I'm just some dude speaking into the void. We are in this together, and I really do believe in this. I think the motivating style that I've found through my wizardry is something that's powerful, because I've also been stirred by that magic. And I can tell you that what's really motivating for me is when I connect with listeners like you.
So always feel free to shout me out on the Patreon. You can use their messaging service or comment on an episode, or send me an email at personisawake@gmail.com and let me know how this magic is connecting with you, because that certainly motivates me to make another episode, to come back and sit down on this microphone and remind you all that I believe in you. Your magic is real.